And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
A perfectly good brain wasted.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Santa Barbara and Ventura Counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is deeper understanding. Each of my guests is giving us a deeper understanding of their subject, whether it's money in the church, the brain, or the operations of a Navy SEAL team. My next guest examines the greatest computer in the world, the human brain. He gives us a deeper understanding of the software needed to keep the brain operating in peak condition. We'll take a look at the tools to boost brain power from his book, Extreme Brain Workout. And if you have questions about the brain or if you want to learn more about the puzzles, you can call us at 639-0008. Dr. Marcel Dennessy is currently a professor of semiotics and linguistic anthropology at the University of Toronto. He's known for his work in language, communications, and semiotics, being the director of the program of semiotics and communication theory. Dr. Dennessy has also held positions at Rutgers University, the University of Rome, the Catholic University of Milan, and the University of Lugano. Welcome to the show. How are you today?
Very fine, and thank you very much for having me.
Well, thank you for being on the show and being a brain subject matter expert in the area of the brain. No better show than Brainstorming with Billy the Brain to be on. So let's set it up for people, because I do believe that the brain is the most powerful computer on Earth. But let's talk about the aging population of the United States first. The U.S. Census Bureau states that by the year 2030, over 20% of the population will be 65 years or older. Now, in Italy, which is your native country, and Japan, the percentages are actually be higher by the year 2030. Baby boomers, however, are fighting aging with solutions like diets and food products and fitness regimens. You take a different approach. You've got a regimen for the brain. Why is brain fitness going to be the next frontier in the battle against aging?
I think the advent of these diseases such as Alzheimer's and other brain degenerative diseases has scared a lot of people and, stimulated the interest in how does the brain work? What can we do? The idea of, exercise, like food. You talked about the baby boomers looking at diets to improve their bodily health and longevity. Well, this is the next frontier, I guess, mental health and mental longevity. The fascination with puzzles is as ancient as human civilization. If you go back in time, you will see that riddles have always been part and parcel of cultures and civilizations. And they were used presumably for the same kinds of things that we use them now. First of all, recreation. They seem to be recreational in at least in purpose, but they really are not, because if you can't solve a puzzle, then it doesn't create recreation at all. It's a lot of frustration.
Creates frustration, that's right. Well, you write about something in your book, Marcel, that you call the puzzle instinct.
Yes.
What is the human puzzle instinct?
Well, if you run into any child on this planet and present them with a riddle, a conundrum, you don't have to teach them about it. They will react instinctively to it. For example, I don't know, why did the chicken cross the road?
Okay.
Well, that child will not let you go until you come up with an answer. No matter how ludicrous the answer is, we need to have that answer. It would seem that in the case of puzzles, which are kind of smaller scale experiences of larger puzzles on the planet, they provide solutions. The larger scales ones do not, and therefore they produce their own kind of self-satisfying effect. Aha, I got my solution. No matter how horrible my life is right now, at least I found a solution to this puzzle. So they go right back in time for that.
Okay.
Obviously, the ancients knew intuitively that there was something going on here that was very human, profoundly human, and therefore psychologically and culturally very proficient. They were intelligence tests, intuitive intelligence tests. Today, we're looking at it more scientifically with the brain scanning techniques and the technology we have there now. We can actually see what's going on there. It is a bit of a leap to go from saying, look, I just gave you a riddle, and now it looks like that area of the brain is stimulated, to saying that it will preserve or activate that area from then on. That's a bit of a leap. But the way I look at it is that at least it's activating. Otherwise, it would stay there, and the synapses would, on their own, die. So there are a lot of things going on there, and the satisfaction that comes from it is almost unique. You know, jigsaw puzzle solvers. I know a lot of them in my own family environment. I know one in particular, when he finishes his jigsaw puzzle, he will never undo it again. He'll say, that's me there. In fact, he puts them on his wall. He's got his whole basement with jigsaw puzzles. He says, these are my works of art.
Wow. Wow. That's incredible. We are talking to Dr. Marcel Danesi, and we're talking about brain fitness from his book, The Extreme Brain Workout. And Marcel, I want to come back to the whole issue that you brought up about Alzheimer's and dementia, because you say that this is an instinct in humans, that the ancients knew that there's something fundamentally human about it. But the ancients didn't live as long as we do today. I mean, you know, the average lifespan was 35 years old. Yeah. Now it's more than double that. It's 82 years old for most people living in the United States. And brain fitness becomes much more on the forefront. So talk to me about the connection between doing puzzles and brain fitness and how that helps to fight off Alzheimer's and dementia.
Yeah. It's not just I that say this. In fact, the Alzheimer's Society of Association of America has endorsed crosswords and Sudoku as things to do to, at the very least, attenuate the effects of Alzheimer's and maybe even stave it off a little bit. So it's starting to spread as a kind of principle that this kind of activity, solving puzzles, and the crux here is that it's a puzzle, not a problem, and I'll come to that in a second. That's where the crux is. That seems to be beneficial to cognitive process.
All right.
A problem has an answer. You know you're getting to it. If I ask you to solve for X in an equation, if you know how to do it, you're going to get the answer. You may make mistakes along the way, and they're mechanical. But if I ask you to solve a puzzle, you're not sure where you're going, how to get the answer, because there are too many twists and turns if a puzzle is well done. And it involves all kinds of faculties, linguistic and nonverbal faculties, so that your whole brain is really activated as you try to solve something like a riddle or even a Sudoku. As much as it seems like a placement puzzle and it's logical, you still have to do trial and error. You have to do combinatory thought processes. And that's more than most other kinds of texts activate in the brain.
Well, now that's interesting. We're talking to Marcel Danesi. We're talking about puzzles. So, you know, you're trained in anthropology. You're trained in a lot of different areas. How did you become interested in puzzles?
Two experiences from my childhood. I used to have my grandfather go and buy me these comic books. Not because I really necessarily like the comics. I like the treasure map at the back, you know, X marks the spot. So I would solve that, and then I feel very good about myself, and then I would read the comic book. The second experience was my mother, who was an immigrant from Italy, from northern Tuscany, and she had barely, I think, grade one or maybe grade two elementary school education. But she did crossword puzzles and other kinds of puzzles religiously. With these Italian, you know, she would get the Italian, and they were not easy to get in that era, but she got them. And she always claimed that that helped her carry out an intelligent conversation, and boy, could she. When you got into a debate with her, be prepared to lose, because she brought information, was able to put it together, much like a jigsaw, and make you see her point of view in its whole, like no one else.
Wow.
Better than a PhD.
There you go.
So she claimed that it had a spillover effect into her life. So these experiences piqued my interest as an academic. And then about 15 years ago, I wrote this book called The Puzzle Instinct. Actually, I started writing the book, The Puzzle Instinct, where I tried to trace the origins of this need for puzzles. And that's how it came about.
And that's how one thing led to another. I guess the message in all of that is mother knows best when it comes to that.
Oh, yeah, she sure did.
We're talking to Dr. Marcel Danesi. We're talking about puzzles. So, Doc, give us the secret sauce. What's your recommendation for a daily brain workout?
I'm not Dr. Phil. I'm not an oracle. It all depends on people and what they're involved in. If you're thinking of the retired person, you could do it at any time. One of the best places to do it is when, I don't know, I do it this way. If you're on a subway or going from one place to the other, you could read. Also, another place is in the morning doing you know what. It engages you. In fact, when I did another book for Harlequin, The Total Brain Workout, someone sent me an email. She says, I hate your book. Why? She says, because every time I'm on my bus, I forget to get off at the stop.
That's great.
That I'm supposed to get off on. It really depends on the person.
All right. Well, let's talk, if we can, in more general terms then. What types of puzzles do you think have been the most popular throughout history?
Yeah. In other words, which ones have caused puzzle crazes?
Okay.
There have been puzzle crazes. Well, the first one was the jigsaw puzzle, believe it or not. The crossword puzzle at the turn of the 20th century became an enormously popular puzzle and led to the first puzzle books of history, actually. Up till then, people were writing puzzles for magazines and other places, but these really, crossword puzzle books, people bought them off some newsstands, and they were going like hotcakes.
Mm.
The third one was the Rubik's Cube, to the best of my knowledge. I mean, I don't know about you. I've never been able to solve one, by the way.
Neither have I. I get very, very frustrated with that.
The most interesting puzzle craze of history was actually comes out of the U.S., and it's by a puzzle maker called Sam Lloyd. It was called the 1415 puzzle. I'm sure you've seen it. It's a tray that has 15 movable little squares in it and one empty one.
Oh.
And they're all scrambled up. The numbers are from 1 to 15, and you're supposed to put them in order from 1 to 15 by moving them around in this little tray. Does that ring a bell?
It absolutely does. I know exactly the one that you're talking about.
Now, the problem with the original one by Sam Lloyd was that he kept them all in order. He inserted them all in order from 1 to 13, but he reversed the 14 and 15. It's impossible to solve it, no matter how you move them around. But, in fact, he couldn't get a copyright for it because it's impossible to solve.
Wow.
Now, in the United States, it caught on so badly that in many states, legislation was passed so that people wouldn't take it to work. And in France, it was banned as a greater scourge than alcoholism. So,
oh, wow. That's something when you think about the French and it being a greater scourge than alcoholism.
Yeah.
We're talking to Dr. Marcel Danesi. Two that you left out that fascinate me, Sudoku, which I think is the most current craze in terms of puzzles.
Yes.
And the one that I like so much because I'm a golfer is the triangle with the golf tees, which
absolutely.
I'm sure is a variation of, say, the Sam Lloyd's thing. But talk to me about those two, if you will,
well,
please.
Sudoku in particular. In fact, I've been studying Sudoku quite a bit since it came onto the scene en masse. It actually came in 2005. It was right here in my office. I was working away. The Puzzle Instinct had come out, and I got a call from the Associated Press. And they asked me, why is it that Sudoku is so catching on so much? And the first question I asked, what the heck is Sudoku? I'd never heard about it. And then explained it to me. And, you know, it's a placement puzzle. In other words, you got to put things in a certain way in these cells according to a couple of simple rules. The most common one is that, you know, in a 9 by 9 one, make sure that the 9 digits never repeat in the same row or column and in certain areas of the format. Well, I saw right away that this would be a craze because it's solvable. Everybody can do it if you tell them the rules. And if you start doing it, it challenges you. It really piques you. Say, why did I should have put that 2 here rather than there? Heck, let me go back and do it, or let me rip it out and start from scratch. Those are usually the ingredients of a craze. It catches on quickly because it's so simple and yet so far away.
All right, but let me challenge you if I can for just a minute, Marcel. Is it really a puzzle or is it a problem? Because it does have a solution, whereas puzzles are more fluid. Is it a puzzle or is it a problem?
It is a puzzle.
It is a puzzle.
Yes.
Why
so? Let me explain why. Because the solution is not, first of all, it's not obvious. And you've got to work with it. There's a bit of trial and error. And you've got to try a few hypotheses here and there. It's not straightforward, like solving an equation. That's the first thing.
Okay.
The second thing is that there is some imagination involved here. You think, imagination is something as simple as, if I were to put this there, what would happen? That's hypothesis testing. That's how the scientist thinks.
Mm-hmm.
If I don't put it there, then what are the consequences in this other part of the layout? Well, that kind of thinking, if you really deconstruct it, you will see that it is extremely imaginative and keeps you a kind of suspense until you find where that two, that simple little symbol, where it really belongs. It's like, you know, it's a code. It's like the DNA, figuring out how it's structured together is a puzzle. You don't know where you're going to get to. And then, of course, if you do with them, after a while, they do become kind of familiar and routine. And that's why they become more and more complex. And people look for much more complicated versions of the same puzzle.
Gotcha. We're talking to Dr. Marcel Danesi about his book, The Extreme Brain Workout, 500 Fun and Challenging Puzzles to Boost Your Brain Power. Marcel, if people, what do you want people to take away from reading your book, Extreme Brain Workout?
I want them to become proficient at doing puzzles. I want them to enjoy doing it and come out with that, aha, I can do it. I feel better about myself. I am a teacher, and there's nothing more satisfying for a teacher than to see his or her students come out of it having gained something that they can take with them forever.
The aha moment, that's what it's all about. So Marcel, if people are interested in what you have to say, they want to learn more about you, learn more about the book, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
Well, apparently Harlequin Books, which publishes, has a website for me. I also write a blog for Psychology Today. It has a lot of information about me. So I guess Google my name with Harlequin or Psychology Today, and you'll find out more about me.
All right. Google Marcel Danesi. That's spelled D-A-N-E-S-I, and you can find out more about him. Marcel, it has been a real pleasure. Thank you so much for being my special guest. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
A pleasure. Bye-bye.